What's up? There we go. Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host, none other than Thomas Drance. He covers the team for the Canucks as well. We're broadcasting live. Yeah, that's right. You cover the Canucks for the Athletic.
Yeah.
Well, oh well, whatever.
I cover the Athletic for the Canucks.
That's right. That would be a job.
Drance thinks we should rebuild again.
Off-season to-do list for Drance and the Athletic. All right, let's get going.
Hey guys, there's another new tiers just dropped.
A sweet gig. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step. 650-650 is your Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. And it is a big day today. It's the final game of the Canucks season, game 82 of the regular season, of course, with them on the outside looking in at the playoffs against the Vegas Golden Knights tonight at Rogers Arena. There's a lot of questions to answer. Could this be the final time we see Brock Besser suit up for the Vancouver Canucks? Is this the last time we see Rick Tocchet behind the Canucks bench? Pugh Suter, you go down the list, there could be a lot of lasts here for the Canucks on the last game of the season. Of course, it is a Wednesday, so we'll do the crossover in a few minutes here with Donnie and Dolly from Czech TV. And we had Books on the show yesterday, so Landon Ferraro is going to join us in his place today later on in the show as well. But that's the number one storyline here, right? And I think more than anything, it's Brock Besser. Because, you know, we've seen the Bruce Boudreau final game, which was still so bizarre that everyone knew he was getting fired the next day. But anyways, the Bruce Boudreau final game, that was very emotional. But typically, for coaches, it's not quite the same as it is for a long-tenured player like Brock Besser. Now, we'll hear from Besser a little bit later on in the show. He spoke to the media today, but I think all eyes, like if you're sitting down to watch this game, probably very near the top of your list of things you're interested in is keeping an eye on Brock Besser, seeing how he reacts, how the crowd reacts, and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, Brock Besser, fan favorite, went through an awful lot of different things over the course of his Canucks career, learned, adapted his game, had some huge moments for the franchise, not nearly enough, right? Not because of him, but because this team never really sort of got to a level where his clutch goal-scoring gene provided more memories for Canucks fans. But yeah, he's been an awesome soldier, a good guy.
Absolutely.
I can fully understand why fans will be conflicted, emotional, watching him play tonight.
And we'll see if it is, in fact, his final game eventually here when the Canucks take on the Vegas Golden Knights. All right, as mentioned, let's go right to it. It is time here on a Wednesday for the crossover with our pals Don Taylor and Rick Dollywell. They're the hosts of Donnie and Dolly, which you can check out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Czech TV. Rick, Don, how's it going, guys?
Awesome. Good, guys. Very good.
All right, so is this the last time we will see Brock Besser in a Canucks sweater tonight? Is this his final game as a Vancouver Canuck? What's your guys' gut feeling on this one?
Well, I think him leaving would be something negative for the organization, so I'm going to say yes, because that's usually what happens, especially this year. And I'm with Thomas. I mean, you can say what you want about him on the ice, and most of it has been very, very good, but also just seems like a very, very good human being and has established himself, at the very least, one of the most popular Canucks over the last 10 years. People love him. He's conducted himself very, very well, on and off the ice.
He's been a great draft pick, guys. Go back to him coming out of North Dakota, and, you know, he wasn't a top 10 or top 20 draft pick. I mean, it's if value-wise, where they got him in the draft in the mid-20s, boy, is he hit value-wise, going 24th or 25th. Look, the reason you really got to seriously think tonight is his last game is because what he said in Dallas to Ian McIntyre, where he said, you know what, he's most likely done. And this isn't the GM or the agent or the president saying this. This is the player. And I want to get this out of the way. That wasn't a negotiation ploy by Besser to say that in Dallas. Go back to when he was traded by, the trade demand came out when you know, Boudreaux had no time for Besser. When that got leaked to the media, that wasn't Besser or his agent that leaked it to the media. That got leaked out, and it wasn't from that side. That comment in Dallas was an emotional comment. He sees his time in Vancouver coming to an end. The offer by the Canucks is clearly nowhere near where it needs for him to say yes. And the other thing is, there hasn't been much change since the trade deadline in terms of any positivity, in terms of him coming back and doing that. I attribute his comment in Dallas to a frustrated player, to an emotional player who sees his time in Vancouver coming to an end. And it was just a guy who wants to stay, but I think he sees the writing on the wall that he's not going to stay.
Yeah, and the question that will be asked by a lot of people is, why the heck, if the Canucks saw this coming, did they not try to get something for him at the trade deadline? And you guys, Jamie and, and Thomas, you know that this goes way back to the Benning era when it just seemed they would hesitate to make a move.
Gillis
like
era.
So it really –
Gillis era, man. I would say, about the Ryan Kesler non-trade. That last Gillis deadline.
Yeah. You know? Luongo before
absolutely.
That, too.
So it stings. That was a tough one. But it stings, right? It stings because not only because you're losing something for nothing, something valuable for nothing, and maybe that'll be the case with Suter as well, but because people have a long memory, they've suffered a lot, and they feel anyway, the kind of fan base, I would think, they don't want to see this sort of thing happen again and again and again, and it hurts.
And Rick, I know you reported, I was watching your show. Sorry, Rick. I know I was watching your guys' show this morning, and you said you have a feel that they'll take another run at it. They'll check in and see if they can get it done one more time. I think you're right. Like, I trust your reporting on that. It's just when I think about it, it's hard for me to figure out, like, why would this time be successful? Why would they bend now? It would be just a fear of, uh-oh, we can't lose him for nothing. Because as much as it would be tough to lose him for nothing, like, you've already made your bed here. I don't think they should bend just because they're scared of losing him for nothing either. So, like, what's going to change? Why would they all of a sudden be like, actually, you know what? We've come around on you and we really want you here. It just seems like there's no reason for either side to really blink at this point.
Well, and they've been going at it since, what, July 1st? That's when he was allowed to do his extension. If you can't get it done since July 1st, how are you going to get it done now? But if the Canucks take one more run, it could be a good PR move and say, hey, we gave it one last kick at the can. It didn't work. You know, but it definitely doesn't look good right now. And the issue is term. It's not even money. The Canucks made a good offer money-wise. Like, you know, they bumped him from 6.5 to 8. You cannot complain with that number the Canucks offered. But the term is the issue because the player is looking for 7 or 8. Pettersson got 8. You know, Miller got 7. So this player's probably saying, okay, well, why did you guys believe in those players to give 7 and 8 and you're not doing that for me? You know, what are they at, 5 or 6? And, you know, can he get 7 on July 1st? Because he can't get 8 on July 1st. Term is clearly the issue, and it is what it is. And you got to give the Canucks credit for giving it money-wise. The money is very good, but it's the term that's causing the headache.
Sorry, what do we have to give the Canucks credit for? For not getting a contract done?
And
not selling him at the deadline either?
You're not getting anything at the deadline?
How low's your bar?
Thomas, hold your horses. Let me finish.
My God.
The money portion of the contract, Tom. The money portion of the contract is good.
You see what I got to put up
with? What I'm saying is the term isn't good. I've had another team tell me that they have no issue with the Canucks term, and I think money-wise they've been more than fair to Brock, but in terms of term,
well, you said you have to give the Canucks credit.
Yeah, I don't have to give
for
them
the money portion of the Besser Don.
Yeah.
What do you?
They didn't offer 6.5 to 6.7.
We just went on about they got nothing at the deadline.
I agree with that.
Which, you know, again, is pretty painful for people here.
Rick watching the Canucks limbo under an 8-foot bar, being like, oh boy, gotta give them credit.
Somebody in the Dunbar Lumber text line says, okay, get Rick some fruit before he loses it here.
Yeah. Well, that's way too low a bar.
They made a
fair offer to an NHL player. Couldn't get the deal done?
So give us your... Hey, Mr. Harvard, give us your take then. Go ahead.
What do you mean?
Go ahead.
Mr. Harvard.
Harvard guy. You went to Harvard, Tom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Give us your take, Tom.
My take is that you don't get credit for offering a guy money if they don't accept the deal. You get to give them credit for building a good team, for getting a fair value contract done, Rick. You got to give them credit. This professional organization made a professional player an offer that they didn't accept. But like, what? I don't even understand what you're trying to give them credit for. Like, you got to give Rick credit. He knows what Harvard is.
We get hold on a sec. We get texts every day. No, but let me finish. We get texts every day, and I'm sure you guys do too. Besser doesn't deserve $8 million. $8 million's too high of a number. I give him credit for going up to $8 from $6.5. The issue isn't the money. It's the term, Thomas.
Right.
If you're going to be staying at 5 or 6, that's what I'm trying to say. I don't think the money portion is bad in the offer. The offer issue is the term. He wants 7 or 8 from the Canucks, and he's not going to get 7 or 8. That's what I'm trying to say.
They could have handled the situation better. Can
no,
we
for
leave
sure.
it at that?
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Going back, not just to the trade deadline, but to last summer even, right? I mean, I think there's an argument to be made.
Oh, for sure.
It would have been hard, but if you were skeptical that he was going to repeat what he did last year, why not look to move him in the offseason? You know he's coming up on UFA status, and you would have had to fill a hole another way, but I don't know. It just seems like we could have avoided this. That's not to say, well, they have to bend and give him whatever he wants.
Yep.
Sometimes the best move is to walk away, but you wonder if it could have been handled differently. Now, we were talking just
before. I've got to give you credit for wondering that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Really
very
appreciate
well
that.
Wondered.
We were talking just before we got you guys on. Okay, could be the last game for Brock Besser. And then the other high-profile figure in the organization we're on watch for, of course, is Rick Tocchet. And I know John Shannon on your show earlier said, you know, wouldn't be surprised if he hears something announced pretty quick here.
Yep.
Jason Brough on our station earlier today reported that the Canucks have recently made him another offer that they're pretty optimistic about. But at the same time, you know, I this is the Canucks. This has been a kind of a funny situation here. I'm not sure I'll believe it until I hear it directly from them. But what's your sense of where this one is heading and when we could find out one way or another what Rick Tocchet's future holds?
Well, I'll go with somebody you mentioned there. That's John Shannon. If he says something regarding the Canucks, it usually comes to fruition within a week, like he just said. That would be my sense of it. Pretty reliable source. John, so that wouldn't surprise me. And this guy's a year shy of winning the Adams Award. I think it's the right move. And let's give this guy another shot at the very least, one more season where there isn't so much damn turmoil.
Rick, can I ask you a question?
I did hear the Canucks.
Can I ask you a question here, Rick?
Yeah.
Because do you remember working the Boudreaux extension talks after that Boudreaux bump season?
Yeah.
And we worked it together. Do you remember how difficult that one was? When by the time Rutherford came out in the presser and sort of declared that the club wasn't going to do an extension, like that came kind of out of left field relative to some of what we'd been hearing. I have this sense, like obviously I trust John Shannon's information, but I also have this sense just from our previous experience working this, like when it comes to coaching, to expect the unexpected when it comes to the Canucks. Do you think of it the same way?
Well, first of all, let me say this. I did hear the Canucks, bumped up their offer to Tocchet this week. And, you know, I am hearing a little bit more positivity around Tocchet coming back than, say, 2-3 weeks ago. And it just seems to me that I'm not hearing doom and gloom when it comes to Tocchet. I really believe this guy wants to come back. I really believe this guy thinks he can make a difference in Vancouver. And term is important here, too, not just money, guys. He's going to get a contract. If they sign him, it's going to be over four. The number's got to be over four. Look at Berube in Toronto, 4x4. Who did Berube's contract? Steve Mountain. Who represents Tocchet? Steve Mountain. And, you know, so I just think that I think Tocchet's looking to be paid not as the top coach in the NHL, but I do believe that he's looking for a fairly significant bump from 2.7. Right. And he's at 2.7 and maybe he believes he should be over four and a half. I don't know. But he's looking for, I think, a significant bump. I don't think to five. But I this week and last week, I'm starting to hear a little bit more positivity, and then John Shannon said what he said on our show. Well,
doesn't there have to be leverage there, though?
Yeah.
I know he won the Adams Award last year, but if he's going to get $5 million, does that mean Philadelphia's in the mix or Boston's in the mix or you know, some competition in order to get the number up very, very much higher than it is already, I would think.
He's got leverage. He's got teams chomping at the bit to get him.
And doesn't internally, even before you factor in the other teams that would be interested in him, you know, Quinn Hughes, that gives him a lot of leverage, I got to think. Not to mention just, and I know you've mentioned this a lot, Rick.
Bang on.
How bad it would look if he walked away from the situation, right? The hand-picked guy that this management team brought in, that's a lot of leverage, even if there isn't a list of teams that's interested in hiring you afterwards.
I don't even go with what Quinn Hughes has said lately. I go back to the offseason, and Thomas, you'll remember this. Quinn Hughes called him the best head coach he's ever had at any level. Minor hockey, college, any level, academies, whatever the case may be, you know, summertime hockey, you name it, the best coach he's ever had. That's saying a lot. And, of course, he's built on that endorsement in the last few weeks or so. You got to listen to this guy. It's one thing losing Besser or Suter, maybe even Tocchet. It's another thing losing 43.
Yeah, and if cooler heads prevail, I do, you know, we should see Tocchet come back. And Tocchet should take Quinn Hughes out for a beer because last week when Hughes raved about him. No, seriously.
Maybe a steak.
Maybe more than
a beer.
Steak.
Yeah. Well, cigar.
Yeah.
He Rick. Should take him he should take him to the most expensive place in town. When that guy raves about the coach and you know his importance, everything's about Quinn Hughes now and keeping him past his 2 years when his contract's up. But when that guy raves about you as the coach, your management has to take notice. Ownership's got to take notice, but this is an ownership.
Notice is gone.
Dave, this is an ownership call, guys. When the salary's got to go from 2.7 to over 4, this is an ownership call, guys. It's 100%.
Now, the other thing that fascinates me about the Tocchet situation is one thing we've heard from basically almost every insider who's weighed in on this is, hey, it's not just about dollars and cents with Tocchet. There also has to be kind of a meeting of the minds and an agreement on the direction of the team going forward, right? He needs to hear what he needs to hear about where this team is going. So I find it very interesting that, you know, before the season is already officially wrapped up, we're hearing a lot of positivity towards getting a deal done for Tocchet. And I wonder if that means, has management delivered a plan to Rick Tocchet that he's confident in, that he feels like, okay, that's something that will entice me beyond just the salary raise. I've heard enough in terms of what you guys want to do with the team and where this team is going to commit to here for a few more years.
But how can he be confident in any plan delivered by this group, given what happened this year? That plan didn't exactly work out, and, you know, led by not being able to figure out the Miller-Pedersen feud or rectify. Maybe you could say they did.
Well,
I think he's confident. I think he's confident in himself.
Yeah,
like the things can't go as bad. They can't, can they? Maybe they can.
No,
they can't go as bad as they did this season. Yeah, I know that the is.
Don't
hang
tempt
on,
fate,
I get where
buddy.
You're coming from. I think he's confident in himself. You know, Demko's healthy. Pedersen's better. Hughes is Hughes. Things will be better at the very least. I think he's confident himself.
Well, they got to pitch how they're going to get a second line center. They got to pitch if Besser leaves, how they're going to get some more top six wingers. Because, you know, let's face it, they only have two top six wingers, DeBrusque and Besser. That's it. Mm. So how are you going to fill? And you lost Horvat and Miller, and what did you get out of those deals? You got essentially two top four D. So they got to sell that. And here's another one for you guys. You know, maybe tell the guy who came from Pittsburgh, where they have a great practice facility, how you're going to get a practice facility someday. That might be a small thing to you guys, but it might be a big thing to a coach. Like, think about when they go to UBC. He can't even go into a room and go over tape with prospects or anybody. And, I mean, this team is in dire need of a practice facility. You guys might think the coach asking for a practice facility is a small thing. I don't think it is. I don't think it is. This guy's coming from Pittsburgh where they won two cups and they did everything right. So I think his expectation is, you know what, let's start doing things right, starting by getting a practice facility.
Well, and of course, the practice facility thing in the news again because of Patrick Alvin's comments to Ian McIntyre saying, hey, we have the resources. We'd love for Elias Pettersson to stay here. And, you know, Rick Tocchet was asked about that. But I'm sure Rick Tocchet would love if they had a state-of-the-art practice facility and he knew, okay, Elias Pettersson's going to be there doing his workouts, skating all the time throughout the summer. But they don't have that. So even like it's not even just abstract, Rick. I totally take your point. It's in the here and now. How much more confidence would he have in an Elias Pettersson bounce back if he was staying in Vancouver working at a Canucks practice facility all summer? Like right now, I think it would make a big deal for them if they had it. And it's not going to happen, obviously, but it's something so they need to fix going forward.
It's so frustrating because this has gone on. This conversation has been around for so long.
Oh.
And you've got an owner who's a land baron, and it's been the only team in the NHL. I mean, Calgary's getting one, finally. The only team in the NHL without a practice facility. And at the very least, you can't maybe hook up with one of the municipalities, one of the suburbs, and come up with something where there's a partnership and you can have a practice facility, which they had, by the way. And Thomas, I think you remember this, at eight rinks. It wasn't perfect, but they had to have it because of the Grizzly situation. Mm-hmm. And they've been there before, and it just went away. It's so frustrating, and it hurts them.
It's embarrassing. And there was traction with UBC. There was a little bit of traction, and then it just went dead. And
well, there was traction with the old Place of Nations. There was traction with SFU. I mean, there's been traction over the years, over 25 years. There's been traction in various spots here and there. At some point, you'd expect them to partner with another organization to do it. But even that's telling, right? Like a lot of these teams, because the sort of, especially in the United States, a lot of these teams run a lot of programming, learn to play programs, hockey programs, competitive programs, academies out of their practice facilities. And that income's not subject to HRR. You don't have to split it as an NHL team with the players, even though obviously the players are part of the draw, practicing there, being around regularly, using the team logo and branding up all around the arena. I mean, these are good sources of money if you own and control it yourself as well. And often a good way to build your fan base, a good way to offer the public programming and sort of generate interest in hockey. You know, I mean, it's not because it's not just the Canucks. Like the Canucks are also a leader in hockey in one of the most hockey mad cities that's producing superstar players on a regular basis, like Macklin Celebrini, who we just saw. What's the Canucks' involvement in that? Like, where's the new downtown rink that's gone up in the last 20 years? Like, the Canucks have no leadership role in terms of generating interest in hockey beyond playing the games and generally not making the playoffs. You know, that puts them in stark contrast, too, with a lot of other teams that are real leaders in this area in their communities.
Yeah, you're bang on, Thomas. We just had Kelly McCrimmon on the show today. In the 11 o'clock hour, friend of Rick's, and doing research for
Kelly
the
McCrimmon
interview.
Said it was a fair offer to Brock Besser.
No. But looking on their webpage and their Twitter account, it's full of minor hockey involvement at their practice facility. I think it's in Henderson. And the kids are out there all the time. Players are out there either watching them or skating with them. And it sounds like a little thing, but first of all, you're developing young hockey players, but you just made the point. You also develop fans. Those people, those kids become adults. They buy, you know the story. They buy tickets, and on you go. It's just such a smart move.
Bill Foley, after he won the Stanley Cup. Bill Foley, owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, after he won the Stanley Cup, said, my next goal is to have a player from Vegas in the NHL. Like, that was his commentary.
Well, and you're going to see one from
it's a priority.
Thomas, you'll see one from Seattle coming too, because the rink's going up in Seattle now.
Incredible.
Right now,
and
you've had players from Washington State or Nevada, but they had to go elsewhere to continue their minor hockey.
Well, the big guy from Seattle that made it was TJ Oshie, right? But you're going to see Seattle, you know, take take off. Utah's got a practice facility. They put the shovel in. Florida's got one. You know, a brand new one. Yeah. We show it on the show all the time. But this owner doesn't want to spend, and he wants deals. He always wants 50% off, or you guys chip in, or this or that. Hey, how about just bucking up and getting a practice facility and getting over, you know, getting it over with?
You know, we get a lot of, I don't know if you guys have got submissions like this in your inbox, but we have a lot of people saying, why don't the Canucks take over the Bay building downstairs and make it into a practice facility?
You know what? I like it. Let's think creatively. That's a great idea.
Yeah. A lot of office space.
Prime space coming up in downtown Vancouver.
It might cost a little bit. People throwing it out there.
I totally agree I'm on board with the importance of the practice facility. I also think one of the reasons it's such a big story here is it lets us all do the thing that Vancouverites and people in the Lower Mainland love the most, which is speculate on real estate. We can all get out Google Maps and look for the plots of land, and we can think, oh, how about here? What kind of development could go here? We're in our element with this story.
Well, but, you know, I think, like, Francesco, I wonder if he's like, you guys have friends like this? I have friends, and they're in their 40s and 50s, maybe even 60s. They're waiting for the real estate prices to go down.
Oh, yeah.
And they've been doing that since they were about 20.
Since the 1980s?
Right? I wonder if he can't be one of those guys, can he?
That's
no
me.
Chance.
Well, that's me, by the way. I'm 100% that guy. Yeah. I'm 37, and I'm 100% doing that. Yeah. No, it's been a lot of L's over the last 12 years.
While we're doing it, I'll throw another one out. What about do you see the big proposals for the Jericho lands in Vancouver of all the towers and stuff? That looks like a pretty interesting location. Yeah. A lot of land there. So, like, I get the point about, well, land in Vancouver, it's so scarce. Big developments happen. You just have to have, as you say, Rick, the willingness to get involved and fork over the cash for it.
Okay, but he buys land to build condos and stuff all the time. Like, buying land is not an issue for him. It's condos, buildings, townhouses. He does that all the time. The problem is a practice facility doesn't give you revenue back.
And doesn't it, though?
How's it going to give you revenue?
Well, like we just talked about creating fans. Goodwill, that sort of thing. That, I mean, I know it's not black and white. It's there every day. But eventually, I think it pays off.
If he does this, he doesn't have to listen to us bitching about no practice facility and one of
that
only,
should be the number one reason.
Fine, I'll shut you guys up. Stop talking about it.
Hey, Thomas has gone quiet now. I think he's thinking about his real estate.
He's researching
dealings.
The Jericho lands.
He hasn't talked for like. Yeah, that's right.
No, he's got an exam at Harvard tomorrow.
He is. I just heard an autoplay video just came up on his laptop 100%. Talking about the Jericho lands.
Well, no, because I'd forgotten that there's executives involved who are, of course, former Aquilini lieutenants on the real estate side involved in the Jericho lands. So the moment you said it, I was like, right.
This is what I'm talking about, guys.
As that proceeds to city council, I think that's actually kind of an interesting tangentially related Canucks story to track. So I started cramming in case they ask me about it at Hartford, which is the knockoff Harvard that I attend. Well, Hartford. I think that's the problem, Rick. I told you when I grew up, I really loved Hartford. And so you're convinced I went to Harvard.
Hartford, okay. Yeah.
Hartford, Wisconsin.
The Whalers.
Big
Whalers
fan.
The Whalers.
Yeah. Was a big Jeff Sanderson guy. That's...
All right. Rick, we gotta ask you quickly about Valander before we let you go. All quiet still?
I checked in this morning on Tom Valander. Very quiet. It's quiet. I don't know what to say to you guys. I don't think there was much going on Sunday or Monday yesterday. And this morning I checked in. I was told that it's very quiet and it's very concerning, guys. This is not a good way to make a first impression with a first-round draft pick. And the report that it's personal for Willander not going to Abbotsford is absolutely 100% inaccurate. He is willing to go to Abbotsford. He was willing to go to Vancouver. The guy wants to turn pro. I don't know where this stuff came out that he doesn't want to go to Abbotsford. The problem is A, bonuses. I think we all know that.
Yep.
But it's just, it's very quiet. They're not close. They haven't been close since the season ended. And I don't know which way this guy goes. I don't know which way it goes, guys. It's either sign with the Canucks or go back to Boston. And you do not want an 11th overall pick going back to Boston for a third straight year. That's just, I don't think I would want that.
We'll see who calls who who's bluff here, right? But it seems to be a staring contest. I likewise was told no progress of Wednesday morning.
All right, guys, we'll wrap it up
nothing,
there.
Nothing.
And I just want to say our inbox now, the Dunbar Lumber text line, overflowing with suggested sites for a practice facility. So we're this is what we're doing. We love to talk about real estate, so I'm glad we could get some of that in. Last one of the regular season, but we'll check in. We'll be talking playoffs next week with you guys. Should be fun.
Adios. Thanks, guys.
So, that is Don Taylor, Rick Dhaliwal. They are the co-hosts of Donnie and Dhali. On Check TV, you can watch it Monday to Friday, 10 to noon.
I
want to
give those broadcasters credit for doing a full segment.
We did our jobs. It's professional, a semi-professional effort, even. I'll go so far as to say.
Which is well beyond our usual standard.
Dhali has an estate out in South Surrey. Why doesn't he put a practice facility out
That's
there?
That's true, man. Wow. Think of the opportunities for him.
I didn't know that he had an estate.
Oh, yeah.
He has an estate?
On Zero Avenue, he has an estate.
Wow. There are some big plots of land out on Zero Avenue.
There are.
Yeah.
An estate. Dhali has an estate?
Donnie. Or is it Dhali?
Dhali.
Yeah, Donnie's not in...
Oh, yeah. Donnie's out.
Estate is in Anmore.
Probably a little far out for the practice facility.
Wow. I can't believe someone with an estate gets off doing the Ivy League Drance thing. That is ridiculous.
I mean, how many acres are we talking here, Dom?
Yeah.
The report for us.
What's the range of an estate, you know?
The grounds. It's got the gardens. The outbuildings. Anyway, all right, we'll take a break. We'll hear from some game day audio next. I want to play Rick Tocchet. I want to play Brock Besser as well on what could be his final Canucks game day. So we'll do that next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Don't miss the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Sat and Bick break down all the action with expert analysis, postgame interviews, and fan debates. Only on Sportsnet 650.
Running a small business is tough. Now more than ever, every marketing dollar has to work harder. That's why Canadian businesses trust Constant Contact. With email, events, and social tools, you can reach more customers, drive sales, and see real results. On average, every dollar spent on email marketing returns $36. That's ROI you can count on. Even in challenging times, our all-in-one marketing platform helps businesses grow. See for yourself. Start for free today at constantcontact.ca.
A worry-free retirement is possible. Are mortgage payments, groceries, and bills holding you back? With an Equitable Bank reverse mortgage, you can turn some of your home equity into cash flow. Wipe out monthly mortgage payments for good or supplement your retirement income. Join thousands of Canadians who've gained more peace of mind and more possibility with an Equitable Bank reverse mortgage. Learn more at equitablebank.ca. Equitable Bank reverse mortgage. Put your worries in reverse.
Make your home way more you. No matter your space or budget, Wayfair's got every style for every home. Modern? Check. Classic? Check. Coastal with a hint of boho? Check. Shop now at wayfair.ca.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk, it's brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. It's the last Canucks game of the season, and the Canucks for Kids Fund 50-50 presented by Park Casino is back with a guaranteed $1 million jackpot to close out the regular season. That is game-changing for one lucky winner and life-changing for communities across BC. Get your tickets now at VancouverCanucks5050.com. That's 5050. Don't miss out. Tickets are on sale now until April 16th. That's today. Of course, the draw is today. Know your limit. Play within it. Must be 19 plus to play. All right. So $1 million jackpot going on at the Canucks game with the 50-50 tonight. And of course, as we mentioned, a lot of eyes on Brock Besser, a lot of eyes on Rick Tocchet as well going into game 82. So we'll hear from both of them here in this shortened second segment. Let's start with the head coach. Here is Rick Tocchet.
No, I just keep the same way. Just keep pushing. You know, like I got to give the guys a lot of credit. Since we were eliminated, I think guys, for the most part, played hard. That's what you know, you want to be a professional, like we talked about.
How hard is that, given that, you know, when you're in the playoffs, every game you're inevitably, this could be the last one, so you get up for that. How hard is that in this context?
Well, the good thing about it, the positive is, you know, we got a lot of young guys, so they're giving you effort, so that helps. Hopefully the veterans do the same thing. You know, Huggy's still, you know, he's still working hard. I think Phil Hronek's been playing hard. Like, the veteran guys are playing hard I know it sucks the last game of the year, but you want to give an effort. I'm sure Bruce Cassidy doesn't want to play this game either. So, but you know, they're pushing.
It's still not where you want to be, though. You want to be playing for that, getting that playoff.
You know, this sucks. I mean, it's sucked the last whatever. But saying that, you know, like this for other conversations, adversity breeds winners and all that, you know, the cliche stuff. And I believe in that stuff. So, you know, nothing's going to be rosy. And, you know, you do your deep dives and you do all your stuff. And there's got to be some new messaging and all that stuff. But, yeah, use this as motivation for next year.
How about playing at home? I mean, you know, this team has struggled at home. Yeah. Does it matter to finish in front of the home fans in a good way?
Yeah, we talked about it. For me, it does. I mean, obviously, it's one of the things we got to talk about. You know, the year before we had a really good home record, and this year we haven't. You know, so we got to figure. There's a lot of things we got to figure out. Could I do something different at home? And I mean, I've already talked to the coaches. You know, you talk about that sort of stuff. You write it down, right? What can you do different? But yeah, you don't like having a lot of duds at home. You know, we've had some good efforts. You know, especially on the road for the most part, but at home for some reason there's been some duds. And you hate to do that. You know, people pay. You know, listen. People pay a lot of money for this, and you got to make sure you entertain them, but also winning is entertaining too.
We talked to Brock about this potentially being his last game. I know you're in a different situation, but there still is a little bit of a doubt in terms of what happens next year. So, do you think about those things, about the possibility, even if it's slim, that it could be your last game?
I don't. No. I mean, to me, it's it's press on, and then there's It's a process guy. You know, you go we're playing Vegas night, the last game of the year, messaging, then you talk about the exit meetings, and then you go from there. So, yeah, you can't think any more than when you have other conversations. That's the way I look at it.
Rick, do you have a timeline, or has a team requested a timeline in regards to your status?
But I mean, eventually there'll be eventually a timeline, but there hasn't been something forced, no. It's been really good.
Philip Hedl is in a regular jersey. Is he going to play
tonight? No, but he. I actually just talked to him today. Had a smile on his face. You know, he had the concussion, I think, but I don't think it's as bad as it was last year. We talked about that. I think there's some other things there. He thought he may have a little bit of a virus that affected that. But he's excited. Like, 3 weeks ago, I think it was doom and gloom because, you know, what's this, his fourth or something? But just talking today, and we'll talk before the exit meetings, he's very upbeat. Like it's almost like it wasn't as bad as it could have been because of this virus he already had. So that's a positive.
Where are you starting to go
tonight? Lanx.
In Petey's case, he's one of the young guys that didn't get papered down earlier this
Marcus?
Year.
Marcus? Junior. Sorry.
He's not going to So he's not going to go play in Adams for the playoffs. And I know those aren't necessarily your decisions. They're Jim's and Patrick's. But was part of the thinking that maybe you guys believe he's going to be here next year and there's not necessarily the payoff as it would be for another guy?
Yeah, there's some – it's over my pay grade when it comes to rosters and, you know, deadlines and all that stuff. So, would you have liked him in playing in the playoffs? But, you know – there's other ways that he can progress. He's got, 4 months here for him to keep on that arrow going high in his development. I mean, he's got a lot of work to do. But, we're going to have to think of other ways to get develop him this summer.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet there, and he says, on playing games that don't mean anything, knowing you're out of the playoffs, quote, this sucks. also says, hey, adversity breeds winner. He believes in that kind of cliched stuff. Got to use it as motivation for next year as well. The update also towards the end there on Philip Hedl, who was a full participant in the team's morning skate. And this is something you and I laid out and talked about earlier in the week, which was, hey, keep an eye on this, because if he graduates from limited participant to full participant, that's a big step in clearing concussion protocol. He was a full participant today, their last day of on-ice activities for the year, so his last chance to do that. And then you heard from Tockett there kind of a little bit of the background of what Philip Hedl's gone through since he suffered the concussion. Turns out maybe it wasn't as bad as he initially thought. You know, he had a virus at the same time, so that could have made the symptoms seem worse than they actually were. And as Rick Tockett said, Hedl very upbeat right now, feels like maybe he dodged a bullet on this one. Huge news for Philip Hedl, and if he can get out of the protocol before the end of the season, depending on how he reacts to skating today, just great for his summer going forward, and big for the Canucks, because they're, I mean, they're, if 3 weeks ago we were kind of having the conversation like, what can you even count on from Philip Hedl right. next season, right? Yep. If at least you think he's going to be healthy coming into training camp, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and clearing the protocol, like if he is symptom free tomorrow after full exertion, full participation in a practice environment with his teammates, then he'd be cleared to return as of tomorrow. Now, the club's out of runway, but that doesn't mean it's insignificant for him, right? Now, you go into the offseason fully healthy. Fully healthy, cleared protocol. Huge.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. Now he's got months to work on his game. I think we liked some of what we saw from Philip Hedl, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. Well, there was, like, it was tantalizing.
There was a nice run of games at the start, and then there was a run of games where there was, like, a lot of cardio and just a lot of, like, sorties through the neutral zone that kind of didn't amount to anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think his size and his speed down the middle, not to mention just, like, having a credible top-nine body in that spot, is massive for this team. Massive.
Yeah, and I think the skill as well. Like, they need a skill upgrade all in their top-nine, all three lines there. So having him, even if the production wasn't there, and it hasn't really been consistently in his NHL career, at least not when he's gotten the bigger opportunities, you still want to see what he can do for you next season. Okay, let's hear quickly from Brock Besser as well. Of course, a lot of focus in this one on the possibility that it is his last game as a Vancouver Canuck. Here's Brock Besser.
Yeah, just trying to embrace it with my teammates and go out there and try to play a good game and finish strong.
You know that a lot of people, you know, are wondering about your future, so there's a possibility this could be your last game. Does that go through your mind heading into tonight?
I'm sure I'll have the thoughts, but you never know at the end of the day. We'll see what happens, and, you know, we'll see what conversations are had after the season.
You've had a pretty good relationship with the fan base here. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some sort of reaction at some point during the game. Are you anticipating that, or what would that be like?
Honestly, I have no idea, but yeah, I mean, the fans have been great to me during my time here, and they've always been supportive, and you know, whether it's at a season ticket memory event or just seeing people out in the public, everyone's been so great to me, and you know, I love the fan base here. They're great.
Career game number 554, I believe. What stands out for you with your time here with the fan base? Have greeted you 40 goals last year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, everyone's been great, and you know, it's during, you know, some of my years here, we've had some rough years, and you know, the fans have stuck by our side and always have been positive and you know, really cheered us on. So you know, it's always great to, you know, have them on your side and be supportive.
You personally, you've been through a lot during your time here in Vancouver. How do you reflect on that, or do you reflect on that today?
No, I'm going to really just try and focus on having a good game with my teammates tonight and finish strong. And, you know, we don't want to go out there and not play a good game and lose the game. So we want to finish strong, and then I'll start thinking about everything after the year and probably talk with you guys again on Friday. So
finish late this year. Or, go ahead, Amy.
What are you most proud of in your time here and what you've been able to do as a player?
Oh, Ian, that's a tough question right now. Can I get back to you on Friday about that one, please?
All right.
Can I give a few days to think about that?
So does tonight have the potential to be emotional? I know you're trying to focus and channel, but when you skate out on the ice, and depending on their reaction, might it be emotional?
Yeah, I mean, it's it's tough to say. Like, you never know what can happen. We'll see what happens. Like I said, I'm sure they'll talk with my agent after the season and I'll see if anything can come to an agreement or not. But, yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be the thoughts, and I'm going to just try and take it in with my teammates. And, yeah, I mean, you really never know at the end of the day, so I don't really want to fully think that it could be my last game, so I'm just going to, just take it as another game and finish here.
How about tonight and just the challenges of the season and the ups and downs, and, you've kind of been in the middle watching a lot of it, and just how difficult it's been to go through this year, especially after last year?
Yeah, it obviously sucks that we're not in the playoffs, and, we're right there, too. We're going to miss by, whatever it is, 4 or 5 points, so it sucks looking back on it, and, at certain times in the season where we could have probably, gotten together and instead of losing a couple games, win a couple more games or win a couple more overtime games. So there's a lot to be said, and it's very upsetting that we're not in the playoffs. But, like I said, I just want to finish strong as a team.
Brock, tonight's Pat O'Neill's last game with this organization. I noticed the nameplates in the dressing room have Patty's name around it. He's been one constant since he's been here. He's been here a long time. Your thoughts on what he's meant to this organization?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You look at it, and he started in, 1980 or something. So he's been here for a while, and, he's seen the league change. He's been with so many people. He's a legend around the league. So, he's been great to me ever since I got here, and he means so much to this organization. So, honestly, I just really want this night to be all about him.
That is Canucks forward Brock Besser speaking to the media, and pretty funny there. Ian McIntyre, our colleague, asks him, what are you most proud of in your time in Vancouver? And Brock, whoa, getting a little ahead of yourself there, IMAC. Not quite in those words, but he says, can I get back to you on Friday when they'll talk to the media? Yeah. Wants to save that for the postseason.
Hey, Ian, media take availability. No, look.
I enjoyed that.
Me too. And that's the key. When the key way that Ian did it was to try and frame it through the player's experience. Did you reflect on this? Was it emotional? And obviously it will be. Like, I don't know what else to say, and it might could be for Tockett too. Like, Tockett, I'm a process guy, I'm gonna, that's the answer you expect, but doesn't mean it's true, right? Like, doesn't, there's no world in which you're doing something and it could be for the last time, even if you're not sure it will be or not, where you don't take stock of it.
For sure. And Brock very much in that media availability we just heard, trying to kind of thread the needle of acknowledging what you're talking about. Like, yeah, of course, I'm not an idiot. Like, I know what's going on here, but also I don't want to dwell on it too much. And he kind of said a couple of times, probably more of a Friday thing when they do talk to the media.
And we'll see. Like, there is road to run before July 1st. Like, there is a world where we have further conversations and figure it out from there.
All right, we'll take a break here. Landon Ferraro joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us in studio, one of our favorites here on the show, former NHL player, analyst on Sportsnet 650, on Sportsnet TV. He is Landon Ferraro. What's going on, man?
Oh, not a whole lot. Just hanging out with a couple of guys in a studio talking hockey.
It doesn't get better than that. Wait, maybe it does. Anyways, you were at the rink today for morning skate, media availability, all of that. I mean, we heard from Tockett on the show. We heard from Brock. What was the vibe? What was the mood check around the rink on game 82 of a season that is ending at the regular season?
Well, it was interesting watching the skate itself. Like, they're still going to the board. They're still working through things, just like Rick Tockett has been speaking about over the last couple weeks of, like, we still have a job. Like, we might, obviously we're out of playoffs, but we still have a job. There's still a game tonight. We still have a lot of young players that are going, and, like, there's still good experience to get out of this. So, it, in that sense, it was still business as usual, but then it gets down below and you're hanging out in the room and waiting for, you know, the guys to go. And, you know, you just heard Brock Besser talking. And, you know, what I found interesting was, you know, there's like 6-7 other guys sitting in the room. And as soon as he starts to talk, like, they all kind of quiet down. And,
yeah.
and they're looking inside the scrum too, right? Like, you know, they're, you know, the guys on the team that are already signed and know they're here next year, like, they're wondering as well what how this is all going to shake out.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I was kind of wondering because Besser himself, when we heard from him, he was trying to not completely downplay it, but really, you know, the emotions of it, he was kind of saying, that's something I'm going to process after the game. Tonight, I just want to go finish strong, have a good game with my teammates. From the perspective of the rest of the team, I mean, how did they, like, is it something they talk about? How do they view the, hold on, this could be Brock Besser's last game with us, last game with this team, last game as our teammate thing? Like, how front of mind is that for the rest of the team?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's front of mind. It's just, I think it's something more that, you know, like, as much as this game doesn't mean anything standing wise and everything, like, you still have to treat it like a game. You still have to go play because, you know, the first thing that can happen when you're not prepared is, like, yeah, you can make a mistake and you get scored on, and you don't want that to happen even in a game like this. But when you're not engaged and ready, like, that's a really easy way to get hurt. And so you got to be focused and you got to make sure you're going. But it's one of those things where, you know, he might go, you know, walk by in the dressing room, or if you have a little superstition thing that you do before a game, like, whatever that might be, like, it just kind of flashes in your head of, like, oh, that might be the last time we do that, or, you know, just anything like that. So, it, you know, it sits in there, but I don't know, once the game starts, it's like a, you know, you talk to a kid that's playing his first game and you're like, you know, after the first shift, I kind of, you know, it's just a game. Like, it's the same for tonight, but there'll be moments throughout it that I'm sure that Besser will have, or even a guy that's had a lot of history with him that, you know, making a simple pass to him, like, oh, that might be the last breakout pass. Like, something that's simple, right?
How do you reflect on, as we get set to watch the Canucks play their 82nd game this season, like, we were debating this before our first segment, but is the word failure to describe what this group went through this season too harsh?
I think it might be a little harsh. Like, of course, expectations were, you know, way higher than where they're sitting right now. But if you look at the team last year, like, there was a lot of guys that had career years. And then you just even, you know, you're sitting in summer last year and, you know, you're starting to get little pieces of information of Demko and then Dakota Joshua comes out. Like, they hadn't even got to training camp and there's already two really big pieces of their team that are not quite, you know, are not going to be ready for the start of the season. And things just start going down from there. Like, once, you know, it's hard to run uphill, but man, it's really easy to roll down the other side. And once it starts sliding, it's tough. So, I mean, from expectation wise, like, yeah, you would have thought that this team would have been able to do a lot more, but so much happened this year that I think you just have to completely flip the script in your head of, okay, like, we didn't move ahead standings wise and push away into the playoffs and continue that success, but they were able to get a lot of young players in. They were able to find that, you know, without this year happening, you don't find out that Elias Pettersson can handle minutes that he does on the back end this young and this early in his career. Then you find Mancini in a trade. Like, you start to find these pieces, and even the forwards you look at, like, Carlson goes into two playoff games last year and he looks really young and getting pushed off pucks, and now he's standing net front, he's controlling plays on the boards. Like, so at least they were able to find a lot and answer a lot of the questions that they would have had come summer of where their young guys are and what, you know, what would it look like if we put them in games next year. Well, they've just got a massive head start on that.
From a player's perspective, as you're kind of taking stock, just like individually for yourself after a disappointing season, is it, and I guess it could be different for everyone, but I'm just wondering, like, do you almost have to try to find that silver lining just kind of for your own sanity? You know what I mean? Going into the summer, like, because if you just sit back and are like, man, we absolutely failed this year, like, I feel like that would be difficult mentally in some ways to go into the summer? Do you almost have to, just for your process as an athlete and a hyper-competitive professional athlete, like find those silver linings that you can use as a jumping-off point going in and working towards next year?
I mean, you definitely need to find a little bit in there, because it can't, like, you can't go through summer angry the entire
right.
time. Like, that will just mentally exhaust you, but...
But you can be a little angry.
You can definitely carry some of it.
Well, to
sure.
flip around what I just said, I can see the argument for brutal honesty too, mm-hmm. right? For looking at yourself and be like, man, that was not good enough. I've got to work even harder. You know what I mean? Like, I can see the pros and cons to both approaches, just how you're internally evaluating it.
Yeah, and I think the important part is to, you know, you look back at what you did in the summer leading up to the season. You look at what you did through the year. You find out the pieces that really did work that you added in from, you know, from the year prior, and you can feel, you know, feel good about that part of the game. But it's more about finding the areas that you need to improve, and that's where, come summertime, like, yes, you still need, it's a different situation, right? Like, you're all back in your own hometowns, you're doing your own training, all of that, like, you're still part of a team, and you need to make sure you're still talking to your guys, and you know, you're just hanging out and checking in that sense, but it's also making sure that they're doing their part, mm-hmm. and they're keeping you honest as well. But it's more about becoming an individual again. And, you know, if I can make myself 10% better, 5% better for next year and the guy next to me, then it's that accumulation that if everyone does their part to what they needed to get better for next year, to really push themselves to have a really good start, and everyone else has done that, well, that's a way that, you know, now you come back as a group and you can put that all together.
So I have this theory about the way the game's evolving, where in a world where goaltenders are only stopping 90% of shots instead of 91.5% of shots, or they spiked as high as almost 92% at one point 10 years ago, that star players have a greater impact on outcomes because there's more goals. More goals mean that, you know, you're less likely to have those third lines making the difference in a game seven, and more likely to have the best players who are the most likely to get the best chances making the difference, but being the reason that their team wins. Given that, first of all, do you buy that? And given that, what does it mean in terms of how significant the emergency is effectively for this team to add, you know, honestly, star-level talent up front this summer?
I would say, to the first part, I think there's a bit of, as well, like, it's such a special teams league now as well, right?
Right.
Like, if you look at a lot of the teams and look at who's leading their team 5-on-5 goals, a lot of it isn't the power play guys. Like the big guys on the team. Like, of course, with some of them where they're, you know, 25 goals ahead of the
sure,
next,
right.
that's different. But for a lot of the teams, like, you know, Suter and Sherwood
haven't
been.
I was going to say,
is it
Sherwood on this team? Yeah.
It's,
5-on-5
well,
goals.
Suter and yeah. Sherwood, I believe, is second still. But, like, it's those guys that come next. So it's a lot of power play where those, like, the best guys can really make a difference.
Yeah.
And because of how many power plays you can get in a game now, like, especially, like, you look at the Oilers when everyone is healthy last year and it was going, like, they were out of a lot of games, and then all of a sudden there'd be two power plays, they get goals, and they're ahead again. And then, you know, I just think, to the next point, for the Canucks, I mean, it's no secret they need speed up front.
Yep.
They need a bit of size. But they need that through the middle, and
yes,
and that's the most important thing. And that's where it makes it harder when, you know, we can loop it right back to talking about Besser, but, like, to find Term and Dollar for him when you know that, you know, regardless of whether we like him so much, we want him back, or, you know, we are ready to move on, like, they need to fill a very significant position that is going to cost money.
Yeah. Well, I would have said they were a top line forward short before they traded JT Miller, right? And then they trade JT Miller, and now you're looking at losing Brock Besser. I mean, would you disagree with me if I said three top six at least caliber forwards short?
I mean, like, it's kind of hard to argue against
if you lose Besser, for sure.
Yeah, if you
right?
lose Besser.
That's what I'm saying. No. Like, if they were one short before the Miller trade, then you lose Miller, and now you're positioned to lose Besser. To me, that's, like, and I'd go as far as to say three top-line caliber guys, which is distinct from, like, a star-level player. I consider Connor Garland to be, like, a low-end top-line caliber guy. But I still think you're short, like, multiple guys of that quality if you're looking at what a Colorado has or a Florida has or a Dallas has or one of the best teams in the league. I mean, those teams go and have top-line caliber guys like an Adam Lowry on your third line.
And that's where, again, like, you, like, the emotion has to come out of everything because, like, it's really hard, just bottom line dollar really is what you're having to think about. So, you know, for Besser, he's in that, you know, 25, 30 goal range. And, you know, if the dollar's getting up to seven,
mm-hmm.
you have Jake DeBrusk, who is at 28 right now, and he's making, what is it, 5.5? Right. So, like, it's hard. Like, you're going to need to open up dollars for the center position. Like, that's just, it's always more expensive, and you're going to have, and it's more important to have that spot get filled over a winger right now because they don't, you still don't know what's going to happen with Filippito. Like, he was in a non-practice or non,
he was full normal.
Yep. Yep. That is the way I was trying to say it. But, you know, like, so he's back moving, but you don't know what's going to happen there. So, like, you really need to focus on that centerman position. And if you can save some dollars there and you have a Jake DeBrusk that's scoring goals as well, you're still going to need to find, like you said, like, you're still going to need to find another winger that can, you know, probably it's not going to be scoring at Besser's rate, but it can still help out, but you need to shore up that center.
But hold on, before we move on here, just because we brought up 5-on-5 goals, I just have to share this. I was looking at the list for the Canucks.
Just the Canucks?
Yes.
Okay.
Just the Canucks. How many? Okay, well, you're looking right now. How
not.
Drance, how many 5-on-5 goals do you think Elias Pettersson and JT Miller combined for in their games with the Canucks this year?
Five.
Ten. Five? Come on.
Well, JT Miller.
JT Miller had three. Elias Pettersson had seven. JT Miller had three
JT
and 40.
JT Miller went 6 weeks between yeah. games scoring on a goaltender.
So those two guys combined.
Like, he was all empty netters and stuff.
Combined. Miller played 40 games. Elias Pettersson played 64. So 104 combined games. 10 5-on-5 goals from those.
Well,
two.
That's just
stunning.
That's double
that's
what I
stunning.
Expected.
Yeah, you're like, wow, they really overproduced.
Well, no, I mean, but to illustrate Landon's point, do you know who the NHL's leader in 5-on-5 goals this season was by a wide margin? Like by a like him and then everyone else.
Was it Protas?
No.
Hagel?
It's Tage Thompson.
Mm.
And it's like he had 33 and I think second place was like 27. Like, he was literally on an island. But yeah, you know, we're not talking about him like this goal scoring ace because
yeah.
it's so inflated by power play usage, which I think also, you know, needs context in terms of how we understand depth forward scoring, right? The Drew O'Connor next year is not going to sniff the power play. Probably going to finish with 30 to 35 points, and people will be like, well, he's not a 40 point guy. And it's like, yeah, but he can still have 40. He still have a huge impact. Anyway, sorry, where was I going?
I don't know. I interrupted you because I wanted to get ahead up there.
Well, that's okay.
I was like, it doesn't matter, Drant. Stop yeah. talking. I've got something to say.
How many goals do you think these guys scored?
It's just shocking to me. Anyways, I do have a question, though.
Okay, you
see,
go.
This is, I've hijacked it now from you. I interrupted you, made you lose your
playing
train of thought.
Long game.
And now yep. I'm jumping in here.
Nicely done.
So the other thing that's happening this week, obviously, is exit interviews and then media postseason interviews as well. And we've heard from Patrick Alvin already to Ian McIntyre about, you know, what they want to see from Elias Pettersson, maybe spending more time in Vancouver. In the exit interviews themselves, like, how much specific guidance is there on, hey, we want you to really focus on this. Here's some, we can't tell you what to do, but here's some suggestions about what we'd like you to do in the summer. Like, how much detail do teams go into laying out exactly what you need to improve and how they think you should go about doing it?
I mean, I can only speak to my experience, yeah. and it really depended on where I was sitting in the organizational
right.
depth chart, right? Like, when you're first coming in, you're a young kid, you're playing in the minors, it's a lot of, I mean, for me, it was always, you know, you got to make sure you get in the gym, mm-hmm. staying on top of that. Like, they knew I'd put the work in, so it wasn't as much as any of just show us your plan once you get back there. They talk to my trainer once or twice in the summer, check in. But as you get a bit older and now you're trying to push for a spot, like it definitely becomes more of a pointed conversation of, okay, like, who are you working with? What's your plan? Do you already have it set up? You know, I've realized from a couple of years earlier, don't wait till after your exit meeting to have a lot of your summer set up
when
you can have things ahead. So I'd make sure I had, I'm already knowing I'm going to start in 3 weeks and blah, blah, blah. You go through that. But the year that I finished in Detroit, played the last end of the season, then played the playoffs, like I had that conversation with Kenny Holland and it was, you can do what you want, but we strongly suggest that you stay in Detroit for as much as the summer as you're willing to give up. Like, you'll be with our trainers here and it's your decision. Like they can't force you to do it. But at the same time, I just got my first taste and I wanted to show that I was willing to do anything to be on that team the next year. And so I ended up spending the majority of my summer in Detroit and working out with Mike Barwis. And it was an unbelievable summer that set up, my only full year up in the NHL. So, I mean, it just comes down to different organizations will handle it differently. But again, at the end of the day, it's up to the player to decide if that's what he wants to do, if he thinks it's worth it or in his best interest. But, none of us are him. It's it's his decision. But to me, it makes a lot of sense.
How confident are you in Pettersson retrieving what he was previously and or adjusting his game to find a way to be as effective as he used to be, even if certain elements of, his shot velocity or skating speed don't return?
I think that he's going to have a bounce back year if he's fully committed to his summer and all of that. That's the first, I don't want to say question mark, but that's the first thing that everyone wants to know and see is that he is dialed in and really putting in the work to make sure that he can be that player next year. Like, I don't have a hard time believing that he will get back to producing points. To me, and not that he has to prove anything to me, but in my head, it's more about when the games get harder and it gets into the later part of the season. Like, that's the part that I still want to wait and see.
Right.
That I don't have that answer, but do I think he can get back to regular season point producing? 100%. He has all the tools. It just, when you're playing catch up in the NHL, it's not a recipe to win.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you have all the skill in the world, if you weren't able or didn't put in the work the summer before and through the season, it's not going to work.
I don't know if you saw this. Harmon Dial shared a bunch of clips of Pettersson's old one-timer goals. Did you see this by any chance?
No, I didn't, actually.
Yeah. And one thing that struck me about it, to be totally honest with you, is if you compare it with how other great one-time finishers score their goals, I'm thinking Dreisaitl, I'm thinking Kucherov, they are so far out. He is shooting from solidly probably 30 feet out on some of these one-timer goals, 30 more feet out than Dreisaitl would from those impossible angles. Or Stamkos, both of those guys ate way closer to the goal line than Pettersson. Pettersson is, these are point shots.
What struck me was how many were from the middle of the ice off a face-off.
They're point
shots. Where Hughes feeds it over to him and he's way out past the circles, right dead center. Yeah.
They're point shots.
Yeah.
At some point, I feel like you've got to be finishing these on way tighter angles, because if you're closer to the goal, you're going to score more.
Yes. And
I don't know what else to say
without seeing it, but knowing what you're talking about, for watching him, to me, because he's such a pass first player, and especially this year, he's always been looking for that pass. If it's not off the face-off, he's always trying to find that higher ice, And then the one-timer becomes available, and he's like, oh, I have to take it here. Well, he's a mile from the net. When you're, you know, the other guys you're talking about, like, they're a shooting threat, whether it's a one-timer or a quick snapshot if a puck gets through the slot. Like, and it kind of goes to what Rick Tocchet's saying, and I know he's talking about 5-on-5, but it is true for the power play as well. Like, you have to get to the interior ice. Celebrini's goal the other night, mm-hmm. I know it's not a one-timer, but, like, this is exactly kind of what I'm talking about, is he's on the flank, but he's not up by the blue line.
Mm.
And he plays one touch with Toffoli in the middle twice. And as he does, now the D have to respect that. Like, they're pulling up. Well, as that puck gets moved around, they take a shot. Now Celebrini's kind of coming off that half wall, and he's looking up at Toffoli. Well, that pulls Elias, like, young Pettersson D, it pulls him up to Toffoli. Well, that clears the lane, and now he shoots and he scores from the hash marks.
And he takes the space, right? He walks in a little bit because he's like, okay, they're giving me the space, I'm going
to
take it.
But he's setting it up, and like, he's like, as much as he's trying to get Toffoli a one-timer, he also knows if that doesn't work, well, now they're going to have to, like, the PK is going to shrink, and that's going to buy myself ice. Like, that's the part of Pettersson's game that has really fallen off this year, is that attack mentality, the using his hockey IQ and his skating and shooting ability to set up plays for himself, not even other players on the team, but for himself as well. Like, if you bomb a couple one-timers early, and whether they get blocked, they hit the net, whatever, well, now that other guy, like, that guy's coming out to block that next one, he's thinking it's coming again. Well, all of a sudden now he can use his toe drag, he can pull it around him. Like, he has a skill to beat him one-on-one, but without the pre-setup of those shots, like, it's pretty easy to stay on your feet. You're not too worried about anything.
Yeah. The mentality point's a really interesting one, because I think, you know, we've all seen the skating speed data and the shot speed data and all that, and you can say, okay, what's going on there? And when we think of, hey, he needs to have a big summer physically, we know what that looks like, right? As you said, like, hey, make sure you're in the gym, you're working on your skating, you're taking care of yourself, you're trying to come in strong, fit, all of that. But there is a mental aspect to what we've seen from him as well, and how do you attack that in the summer? Like, how do you try to change your mentality in the summer when you're not playing competitive games, right? Like, you're doing your workouts and you can have a competitive mindset there, but how can you try to change how you're approaching the game from a mental standpoint in the course of a summer?
I don't want to.
Or can you?
I don't want to blow your question off, but I put it right back to physical.
Sure.
Like, for him, I think by him getting stronger and knowing that he is ready to compete and he's able to do the things that he naturally wants to do, I think that will help him mentally click over. Like, going back to the year that I went to camp here on a PTO, and even before camp started, just skating the couple days before, and I remember his first day coming out on the ice, and, you know, you're watching him and you're like, okay, this kid is really good.
Yep.
But then we get to playing 2-on-2 or 3-on-3, whatever it was. And, like, what I remember is him, like, toying with guys and using the reverse hit, but also, like, going square to a guy. And, you know, he has, like, Pettersson has the puck. The guy's coming to check him. And he just throws that shoulder into him, buys himself that little bit of space, and then jumps around him and goes, makes play or shoots, whatever he did. But, like, that's a guy that clearly came in and knew that he had done everything, and he knew that he had the ability, he was strong, he was ready to make, and he was hungry to show that he could do it. Like, that's the part where, I guess, with
this
mentality,
is Victoria, right, where he just came in and he was like, this is my team. He dusted everyone in the 40s skate.
Yeah,
like, it was like an imperious showing. It was there was some hubris to it, but I mean that in the most, like, non-derogatory way possible. I mean, he was, it felt like
there's some swagger.
There was swagger. It felt like a statement to his team. And you know, I honestly, at the time, I was coming from working with Florida, and I was like, oh, wow, this is the sort of core of steel that I know that the Panthers organization had been, like, waiting to see for years from Sasha Barkov. To rewind and think that I had that thought with what's happened since is just mind blowing.
Yeah. With both players.
Yeah.
What's
that's
happened
what I'm saying.
Since. Yeah. We got to take a break here, but this is like a Jay Leno moment. Do you want to stick around? I don't know if we're going to do a full hour or not. Yeah,
I'll stick around. I mean, I drove over here. I'm sitting here. I might as well
You don't
stick
have anything
around.
To do, do you? You
I might
to...
stick around till game time. You're not getting rid of me.
There you go.
You don't have to move your stuff.
All right. We'll do more with Landon Ferraro next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.